This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, Indies, and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what is going on, my friend?
Oh, same old, same old. Just had a nice trip to San Diego. This time, no wrestling show to get canceled. Went to a ton of different breweries. Went to a really awesome winery that did wild wine. And then even a sake place. The guy was telling us there's only 16 sake breweries in all of North America, and he's one of them in San Diego. And the stuff was pretty good. I actually really enjoyed it. Now I'm like, I wish I could go to more sake breweries, but the options are very limited here in North America. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, not bad, not bad. The only time I've ever had sake is when I've done sake bombs and stuff, so I'm definitely not an expert at all on sake.
Yeah, it was really interesting. He had some that were like dry hopped and some that were aged in bourbon barrels and all this kind of crazy stuff, so it was definitely pretty interesting.
All right. Well, we kind of have a short show. We didn't really have time. Really, we're just nothing really going on, so we're just going to cover CWF and NXT, and then we're just going to talk about our top 10 wrestlers so far this year, and top 10 matches so far. So we'll get right into it. We'll start with the shows, and we open up with CWF, and you know, I overall, another really fun show, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. I would say overall great episode and nice little surprise on the end that really made it feel like a special episode.
Yep, exactly. Then we open up with Fox and Daddy versus the movie guys. I don't know what you want to call them. There's the movie man, movie whatever, and And what's the other guy's name?
I think it's Timmy Danger.
Timmy Danger.
Movie Mike. I think episode they were pushing that they're now being called the Co-Stars.
That's it, the Co-Stars. What'd you make of this?
The match itself, really, I think, was a shining beacon of the idea that the Southern Tag formula can really make everybody look better than they really are. Because I thought that the Co-Stars looked a lot better here than they have at all so far in CWF. Really enjoyed just kind of, the tag structure. I think Dirty Daddy selling was always fantastic. Snooty Fox coming in from his power spots are good. So just having a good, easy tag structure with baby faces who are over and play their roles well made the match a lot better than it really should have been based on who they're going up against.
Yeah, Southern style tag team formula. I think it's the easiest and the best formula in wrestling. And it's such a great way to teach younger workers how to work and put some time in the ring without really screwing it up. Like, as everyone knows, I'm a huge Houston wrestling fan. I watch the NWA On Demand service. And a match they just delivered on was this is a 1987. So this was Sting, a green Sting, Eddie Gilbert, who's a master, versus Gorgeous Gary Young as a babyface and Jeff Gaylord, and they did a 20-minute match, and it was Southern style, but with one Meister worker and Eddie Gilbert, and it was a really good match because of the formula, and they had one guy leading, taking these three greenies, or Gary Young really wasn't green at that point. He was just clearly the second best worker, and was able to lead him through to a really, a three-star match, and here Fox and Daddy was similar. I mean, Daddy, as like you're saying, is so good at selling, and Snooty Fox is also he's really putting the things together, and they're able to go and use the formula and have a good match, Then we got the Mitch Connor promo. Really good stuff. I want to see him just murder Kane. I'm really digging. I loved the Kane Cecil stuff. And I'm really liking Kane versus the veteran type of stuff, or the guys who or veterans who were, you know, a little past their prime type of thing. And I kind of get it because I like it because he's like this arrogant young punk type of thing. And it's just he's really being disrespectful to the guys who helped build CWF. And I really enjoyed this, and I'm really looking forward to this match. What about you?
I thought Connor's promo here was fantastic. I think that he really was able to convey, like, realism. I bought into everything that he was saying. I also think that he did a really good job of not playing up the tropes that a lot of guys do as he's talking about paying your dues as a young kid. He doesn't go like, I paid my dues and now I'm a vet and it's my time. He says, you know, I tried to do the same thing and there's a price that you pay for cutting the line, and I may have done it, but I got my ass kicked for it, and now it's time for you to pay the same price. I'm gonna, you know, kick your ass. And I kind of loved that twist on that formula of the promo.
Yep. And then we get Sis versus Ethan Sharp. And I got to say, I really like this. I love Ethan Sharp as Andy Kaufman. And I thought this was a total blast. And I think this Ethan Sharp versus the Women feud actually has some legs to it, because Sharp plays that role really well. And Sis was a perfect foil for him. What were your thoughts?
Similar to you, I was a bit hesitant on it, because it really is a blast from the past. I mean, he's completely dressed like Andy Kaufman. He's playing up the Andy Kaufman everything to the angle. But his personality and the storyline that they're doing made it work here, when I think that really if anyone else was trying to do it, or any other promotion was trying to do something that really feels so retro, I think it could come across pretty bad. But in CWF, they have enough goodwill, and they're able to play it enough tongue-in-cheek that I can still buy into it and enjoy it.
Yeah, then we get this Lucas Callis and a Boarhead promo. I don't know what to make of this. I mean, they're coming soon, but I have no idea. Have you ever seen Boarhead wrestle?
Yeah, he wrestled in CWF before. He's from Chikara.
Okay, I've never seen him. Okay.
Proletariat Boar of Moldova. And yeah, he wrestled when they were doing this stuff in Chuck Taylor TM, Stokely Hathaway. As Chuck Taylor first came in, he had, I think, at least one match. He may have had two different matches around that time. But it was also at the time where the Storm of Entrails showed up, and they were really kind of dominating everything going on the TV show.
Okay. What'd you make of this? Yeah, because I didn't understand a damn thing Boarhead said at the end of the promo.
Yeah, Juke Joint Calhoun obviously has his character down, and definitely really plays it up. These are two Chikara guys. It's nice to see them spread their wings a little bit and get out there and try their stuff in different places. Boar is actually a pretty solid worker for being a guy in a boar mask. So, you know, it's he kind of brings it up. Even though he has a goofy gimmick, he'll actually have some decent matches. So I'm kind of excited for these guys.
Do you find it weird that, like, Chikara guys are coming in and working, like, the most traditional wrestling place in probably the most traditional wrestling area and most traditional wrestling promotion in the world right now?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, in some ways, Dirty Daddy is Larry Sweeney.
Okay.
And Larry Sweeney was, you know, the man in Chikara. And some of the Chikara guys have come in through CWF already that we've seen. So I think if you try to play up time travel and, you know, the Jacob Hammermeyer and the Estonian Thunder Frog with his hammer that's like from the gods, and some of that stuff that's a little too goofy, I think can't work. But there's some stuff about Chikara that's about as Memphis as it gets. And I think that CWF can embrace Memphis style zaniness. So it's like yes and no. I couldn't see some characters directly porting over into Chikara or into CWF exactly how they are in Chikara, but there are some characters that I think fit Chikara perfect. I mean, one, Francisco de Coronado, who I just recently watched in the Johnny Kidd Invitational that Chikara just did. I mean, he's about the perfect character for CWF. He's kind of like an ethnic version of Ethan Sharp. And I mean, it's, you know, it works perfectly. So I think it's yes and no. I think realistically you can make almost anything work anywhere. It just depends on how you form it.
I think if they present it right, I think it could work a lot for them and stuff. And so it all depends. You know, they got to be a little bit more disciplined than with the zaniness that Chikara a lot of times will bring. And then we get this great tag match: Eric Royal, Roy Wilkins versus Trevor Lee and his surprise partner Chip Day. What you make of this, man?
I thought that this was about as perfect as it could have been done. I mean, going into it, they're saying, you know, that the All Stars are saying, we don't have opponents, just call it a match. I love that they laid out the challenge. They didn't have to lay out the challenge. And then now they're coming out and trying to just cancel it before it even starts. It's such great heel shtick. And then Stutzy says, oh no, we got you covered. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is why you can't swerve them every time, and you can't have the big secret surprise debut every time and make a big deal, because they're so kind of metered in their booking in CWF. In my head, I'm like, oh, maybe it'll be White Mike, that'd be cool. But probably it'll be like, you know, the Sandwich Squad or the Carnies or something like that, you know, where it'll be a normal team showing up, maybe two jobbers. They even reference that as he's talking about, oh, is it gonna be God, I can't even remember his name, like Cool J. Oh, is it gonna be Cool J? Bring him out, bring Cool J out. And you know, so you're just kind of thinking that. And then when Trevor Lee comes out and he's got the big boy music playing, I'm like, oh man, this is exciting. I wonder who his partner's gonna be. And I'm thinking, oh, is, you know, is Andrew Everett healed? How's he doing? Because the guy gets injured. I think he spends more time injured than he spends
Yeah,
not
no,
injured,
right.
unfortunately, just for how talented he is. I think he's going to be one of these guys whose career gets cut short just due to the fact that he can never get it going.
Yeah.
But so I'm just thinking, oh, who could it be? I'm thinking maybe one of his students. I'm even thinking it could be Kane Justice. That would be interesting, just for shits and gigs, just because I like him. And then, oh, it could probably be Chet Sterling, because that's his like go-to partner. And then who pops through the curtain but Chip Day off of this monumental match, 5 stars according to some people, according to many people out there, respected pro wrestling journalists included in that. And it's just like, oh man, these guys who had this epic match are now an epic tag team. And then they get into it, and the shine in the opening was fantastic. And it really plays well. I mean, you know, you start out with Eric Royal, or not with Eric Royal, with Roy Wilkins and Trevor, and because you spend so much time putting over Roy Wilkins and protect him to be this kind of next level technician, when Trevor's able to out technical wrestle him, it's a big fucking deal, and it just shows how great Trevor is. So then you turn around and you switch partners, and it's Roy and Chip, and it's the same thing because Roy, or not Roy, Eric Royal doesn't run from anyone. You know, he's a big badass monster who can kick anybody's ass. And so when he's in there with Chip and he's kind of joking around, but then when he t gets that first big kick and now he's trying to hightail in it and he doesn't want to play anymore, it's even bigger. And now these guys are just so legit. They're picking them apart on the mat. One issue I had is you set up the heat with Wilkins cutting off a cheap shot. I thought that that was kind of weak, especially when, you know, I feel like Trevor and Chip are just such strong baby faces in this setting that I don't necessarily like the idea that he was even trying to take a cheap shot as he was going for that kick off the apron while Wilkins wasn't looking. And that's what they used to set up the heat. Then from there, the heat's fantastic, with the All-Stars really never being super blatant heels, but definitely always taking underhanded cheap shots when they can, but never fully cheating, which I liked a lot. And then finally, you close it out with this double team barrage of just nasty kicks from Trevor and Chip Day. And it's just, yeah, they just close it out fantastically with just nasty looking kicks. They get the big win off of this all-star team that's been made to look just almost unbeatable. Except for, you know, they have that one blemish of losing to the tag team champions at the end of the Canoodle Cup. And now, you know, this kind of super team of these phenomenal workers who are ready to throw down with each other just as much as they are with other people are able to get this big win off of them. And it feels super important, super big, great storytelling, and just all around great match.
What type of star rating did you give it?
Oh, I would easily give this 4.5 stars.
Oh, wow. Okay. I gave it 4. I liked it a lot. And everything you said, I thought was on. I just felt when they went into the finishing run, I felt it was a little long, and they were losing me a little bit towards the end. But overall, I mean, I absolutely loved the beginning. I loved like Lee and Wilkins exchanging holds on the mat in a feeling off type of process, and they get the play up and the announcing playing up their history, and then Day and Royal square off, and Day hurts Royal's arm, and then the faces shine by working over the arms of both good different guys, and then you see Wilkins cutting off Day, and then they get the heat on Day, and Day catching Royal in the heel hook. I thought that was a lot of great drama and really built, but then it all broke down, and then I just felt the finishing run just went a little long. But I totally agree with you that it had a totally big feel to it. It felt important, and it was definitely well deserving of a main event. And I also liked the early part where they were kind of ribbing Kane Justice in the commentary, or not in the commentary, but between Day and Lee kind of poking fun at him. Which, you know, could be bump, you know, they could be teasing something for the future there too. Overall, another just really strong show from CWF, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, easily. And as I said, I mean, it felt like a normal episode. It's going through and totally fine with that. It can just be another episode of CWF. They're always good, but then you top it off with this fantastic tag match to end it, and it really kind of makes it feel like an episode that you gotta see.
Exactly. And on that note, why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll look at some NXT action.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. We're back with NXT. And we open up with Peyton Royce versus Ember Moon. You know, these guys, I just don't know. I don't. At this point, I don't really care about either one of them in ring at this point. And this is me coming, and I was an Ember Moon fan before she became Ember Moon. It just seems like this feud is like the never-ending feud, and it's not even an interesting feud. It kind of has turned the dial heat with me. I mean, even though I did watch it, it's just like if I never see these two wrestle again, I'll be fine with that. Well, what about you?
I'm higher on Peyton Royce than you. I think I liked her control on the shoulder. And I liked a lot of her work here, but don't get me wrong. Like, she's obviously a very pretty girl, but her face is really terrible for wrestling. Like, she just can't sell facially. And, it really takes me out of her performances a lot of times. 'Cause you just can't buy her. I just can't buy anything she's doing a lot of times because her facial selling and her, like, facials when she's in control, even. She just looks, like, super just awkward. Ember Moon, obviously is very solid in ring, and in fact, I think that this was one of her better performances so far in NXT. I thought that, yeah, like, she looked really good, but, you know, she's in there with Peyton Royce, and it really kind of affects the match, and this is one, like, it was obviously, like, kind of a squash, but they gave a good amount to Peyton, and I can definitely see why they would give more in-ring time to Peyton than Billie Kay, but she really needs to work on kind of committing to the matches even deeper for her selling and just for everything so that I can actually, like, enjoy them and get into it.
Yeah, it seems like she's trying to get by more on her personality than the actual in-ring work, which, I mean, I'm all for it if the personality is really cool, but what their gimmick is kind of run its course, because it feels like it's been on TV front and center for the last year, where it's almost like overexposed at this point. What you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I could definitely see that argument that that they've just done too. They've been around too much at this point. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely agree with you that I think they could use some freshening up and maybe kind of hit the drawing board, make them give them something new so that I can care about them a little bit more.
Yeah. And then we got Ono and Hiro, and it seems like they're clearly doing a slow build here. What did you say?
Yeah, Ono and Hideo.
Did I say Ono and Hiro? That's yeah. Funny. Yeah, Tommy and Ono. Clearly, I mean, they were there, and then we got a hot angle. Then they're cooling it down again. So they're definitely, you know, peaking and fun, you know, just definitely teasing us right now, but definitely slowing it down, which I have no problem with. What about you?
Yeah, no, I liked it here. I think that they did a fantastic job of essentially turning this into a slow build, and they're finally giving enough explanation, I think, to Hiro and why he's taking the shit so that I can buy into it somewhat more. So that definitely works a lot for me in helping keep this story going.
Yeah, and then we got the Ely brothers versus Sanity. What were your thoughts here?
I thought that Sanity actually looked really good here. I think that the Ely brothers being used as Twin Tower jobbers is not great. Actually, you know what? I have to take that back. I don't think Sanity looked that good. I thought that Wolf looked good for most of it. He's definitely seems to be adopting to the character more and understanding what he's doing. There is some stuff that I don't like. He's trying to, like, encompass some, like, mosh pit style dance moves to fire up himself that I don't think works necessarily perfectly. And I don't know, you know, if that's great, but I loved the tagging in and out, mugging the Ely brothers in the corner. I thought that was a great spot from Sanity. I liked when the Ely brothers finally look like they got a chance and they're setting up a heart attack style move. They get cut off with EY taking a sneak attack as Wolf is gouging at the eyes. And then I loved the big finish as it's kind of a variation of the 3DB with EY leaping off the middle rope to grab the neck breaker. So I thought that was good. And this really was a nice showing for them as a team. But I also still think that there's not a lot of cohesion to what the gimmick is supposed to be. And it does hurt the overall act.
Yeah. And then we get this recap of Asuka and the Nikki Cross brawl. You know, I'm all for recapping angles and stuff, but they recap every angle the same way. So, like, this one should be, I throw this one up as, like, either your number one or your number two angle right now going on. So they need to make it a little special, like, maybe stand out this one along with, like, what happened later on with Rude and Strong. And then maybe some of the other angles, maybe show the angle while they're wrestling or something, you know, in like, a small box. Because if you present every angle the same, then none of them really get over as the more important angles. You know what I'm saying? Then it just becomes a recap piece and not a part of what makes this stand out. You know what I'm saying?
No, exactly. It does. I thought that this one was done okay, though, compared to, as you're talking about last week, with them doing it a little bit too much. I thought that this one was done pretty well.
Yeah, these here, the two big angles, I mean, they only had two of them, so they stood out as opposed to giving us five different angles, and then they all just become watered down because you're putting the angles next to each other, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get a Sonya Deville vignette. I mean, again, it's hard to get behind her since they've jobbed her out, and now they're trying to repackage her, rebuild her a little bit. So I don't know. It just feels like, I know it's kind of like they're building her up after the fact, which I don't think ever really works. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I honestly feel like she's, as you said, she's been kind of blown out at this point, and kind of overexposed. And I mean, I know that this is a me thing, and I can't blame them for making the choice because she's obviously younger and probably has a slightly better, more marketable look. But to me, she comes across like a knockoff Shayna Baszler. And yeah. I'm just like, why not just get the real thing? Especially when the real thing comes with the connection to Ronda Rousey. They can get you some crossover fame. Because, yeah, I mean, Shayna Baszler does this act, but you buy it, you believe it, and you think that she could actually kick someone's ass. And this girl does this act, and I don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, especially when they originally had her teaming with the girl from Total Divas. And, I mean, it's just, I don't know. But then she wrestles Rachel Evers, which is Rachel Ellering, and I really think that's a classic thing to do, which is basing it off Lance Storm, which is Lance Storm's real last name is Evers, who taught her, who was her trainer. So I thought that was pretty classy to take his real last name as her stage name in NXT, because obviously they don't want to tie her to Paul Ellering at all. And they had a match. What you make of it?
I thought Rachel looked good, obviously. I think that, again, Deville is just really hampered by this gimmick that I don't think she's necessarily works well. She's aggressive to start. I loved Rachel trying to fight out of the body scissor. I thought that looked good. And honestly, by the end of it, I mean, Rachel's hope spot was the best offense of the match, which is just, it does make me just question, like, why the fuck isn't she signed?
Which is, I think a lot of people are asking that, and it's actually becoming pretty trendy on Twitter, it looks like.
Yeah, but I mean, then I stop and I think, and I'm like, oh, I know why she's not signed, because she's smart. I mean, she's got probably her dad in one ear and Chris Hero in the other telling her, listen, if you want to be a wrestler first, and then you can come to WWE and be a sports entertainer, you know?
Yeah.
And you're better off kind of going out there and living the wrestler's life before you just get tied down to here where they're going to expect you to do one thing. And, you know, and she's definitely showing that it's working out for her a lot better that way. She's a lot more well-rounded. She's a lot better competition in general, or better wrestler in general, because of the experience that she's getting to wrestle all over the place. I mean, if she had went straight to NXT, she might have been, you know, somewhat popular in Full Sail, whatever, but she wouldn't have got to experience this thing where we talked about it a couple weeks back. I mean, somehow randomly in Texas in Wrestling Circus, she's like the number one baby face of this company.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fucking crazy. And she wouldn't have got to experience what it's like to work on top like that if she's just in NXT.
Oh, yeah. I'm all for people getting their seasoning. And I think I've seen Lance Storm say, like, hey, there's no rush. Let her learn. Let her, you know, master her craft and then come in, you know? When she's ready and the company's ready.
Yeah, exactly. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I think that Deville's finisher is stupid. I don't understand why you'd grab a Kimura lock and then roll onto your back and then grab just to hold the Kimura on the mat. It's just really dumb, and it flies in the face of anyone who has any concept of like shoot grappling and shoot submission holds. On top of the fact that they show that she gets fired up and takes her gloves off. It's just like, Jesus, all of this is just, it's really throwing it in the face of anyone who has any concept of this stuff for real, and it's just turning it into this cartoon character version of an MMA fighter that you know, is obviously meant to be presented towards kids who don't understand the concept of the wrestling, and they just like the pro wrestling thing. It's just, it's really kind of bad. It's just, it's this terrible kind of kayfabe-ized version of an MMA fighter where you're just like declawing her and doing all of this stuff that makes no logical sense.
Right. And then we get a really hot angle with Rude and Strong. I thought this was fantastic. Rude was such a great heel here. I mean, they're almost doing a playoff of Steamboat Flair, where Strong is the family man like Steamboat was. And it didn't really work for Steamboat back then, But it actually is actually working here more for Roddy than it worked for Steamboat in 89. And he looked really good as the babyface, saving his, well, defending his wife's honor and his kids, and getting after the heel. But I thought Rude again was the straw that stirred this drink. He was the catalyst that drove this angle. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that this was the perfect way to do this angle. What they did is they kind of put together these two guys, and as you said, they make the backgrounds with Roddy being the family man and Rude being the world traveling champion. You got Rude doing all the talking. You got Roddy showing off his strong suit, which is being aggressive and intense. So it's really the best way to present both of these guys wrapped up into this one angle. I thought that it was just done almost perfectly.
Yeah, it really is. It was a top flight angle. And then we get Cassius Ohno versus Aleister Black. This is the first time meeting between the two of Ohno and Black. But they've wrestled as Hero and what is his name now before?
Tommy End.
Tommy End. So it's a good opponent for End or Black. You saw me on Twitter. I felt that he should have saved this as a big match for a special as opposed to a TV main event. You tweeted to me that he had a big match against Cien Almas that I had don't even remember. So it could not have been that big of a match, right?
Yeah, that was his debut match. So
okay.
Yeah.
So that was just to get him over strong. I just felt he had a lot of positive momentum. So I didn't think he needed to go 50-50 right yet, where I felt like he should have built to his opponent. And this just kind of came out of the blue a little bit, so it was a little weird to me. And it got a lot of love online. I'm a little mixed on it, where I thought the crowd was totally not into it. And I don't think it did either guy a whole lot of favors in that aspect. And Black had a ton of momentum going into this match. And it was a good, solid, hard-hitting match, don't get me wrong. But the crowd just wasn't buying into the story. Or they were just not into the characters, or it was just something seemed off in the match from a crowd perspective. What were your thoughts on the match, and what about the crowd and what I'm talking about?
So what you're talking about is honestly like this weird, it's almost like a pseudo issue with the match, or not a presentation, but a universe issue that I also had with the match. I loved this match. I adored this match. I thought it was great. I love both these guys. I think that they're great together. As you know, I'm a huge fan of Tommy End. Huge fan of Chris Hero, because there's no way not to be. And Aleister Black, I think they've kind of hit everything perfectly so far with his presentation. Cassius Ohno, though, on the other hand, I think that it has been obviously a little bit less so in the idea of being like knockout, drag out, fantastic. So it does then make it a little bit difficult in this setting. I think that you're missing a lot of the backstory here when you don't have kind of who these guys are presented properly. I think that you're missing, like why do they know each other so well? That story hasn't been told in NXT.
Not at all.
So it does become then, like, why are they interacting like this? Especially when Cassius Ohno hasn't been treated like a jobber, but he's like jobber to the star. Like, he's not a top level guy.
He's like a gatekeeper almost in a way. Like,
yeah,
he puts over guys who are going up the card.
But the thing is that they're like banking on the equity that he has from the indies. But they're kind of they're not even telling us. I was gonna say they're not showing, they're telling, but they're not even telling. So they're expecting you to just know this guy is important, like because he's big, but they haven't given him in the wins. They haven't presented him that way on television. So it did make the match feel in some ways wrong, like it shouldn't be happening this way, because Tommy End, how, or Aleister Black, how he's been presented so far, should be able to just destroy this guy, you know, based on what he is. But so, the match itself, though, if you, you know, don't think about it, about that side of things, the match itself was fantastic. I think both guys just looked phenomenal in there against each other. I think Chris Hero, this is like, this is the Chris Hero 50-50 putting the guy over match where it's like he's not, it's like somehow by going 50-50 with the guy, or even sometimes less, like sometimes Hero takes like 75% of the match, but yeah, then makes the guy look better than if it had been a squash match, just like with his timing. And I said it, you know, as I'm watching the match with my wife, I said, like, no disrespect, because everyone knows I fucking love Tommy End. I was, you know, preaching to the heavens about how great he was years and years before he got signed. But, like, he doesn't have matches this good. He doesn't have performances that look this good all the time. And it just goes to show just how good Chris Hero is. Because he knows how to make his spots mean more, how to put him in the right positions for everything he needs to be in the right positions for. So, realistically, it's just kind of like, a lot goes to Chris Hero on how he can format the match. I thought Tommy broke out some nice spots here, but he, some of the stuff he's doing it for the first time in NXT, and as you said, this may have not been the setting to be the first time that he does that kind of Cabrata body block moonsault, or the first time that he does that big double stomp, or, you know what I mean? So it did kind of feel like that stuff should have been saved and broken out for big clutch situations and bigger matches. And while this like felt like a big fight, it didn't have the backing and the build to make it make sense. It's like, I know I'm watching Tommy End versus Chris Hero, student versus trainer, you know, ex-tag team partners who just fucking love to just clatter each other to hell with big strikes. But the NXT crowd hasn't been told that story. And so if I'm going to play along, I haven't been told that story in this setting. So in the world of NXT, you know, Cassius Ohno and Aleister Black have known each other for a month maybe, just from working at the Performance Center. And so why did they have this insane match with each other? It just kind of didn't make sense. Yeah, so, you know, that being said, I thought that, as I said, it made Aleister Black look like a big deal coming out of this with a nice win. I loved the way that Chris Hero was able to use his size in a way that was really kind of different, and that he used his size to show off that having that extra mass helped him with his leverage in technical wrestling, which I thought was really impressive, because most of the time you only see guys use their size for power or for like small leverage advantages, like for punching and striking. But he showed off using his size and strength advantage for technical wrestling. I thought that was great. I thought that the finish was hot. I loved that the black mass, or the blackout, again, is just put over super strong. And I think going forward, I mean, it's very clear that Aleister Black has a very bright future in WWE.
No, I totally agree, and stuff. It just, I guess I just wish they would have, yeah, I think they had time to tell that story that we all know, but they need to tell his audience, and they could have made this match mean more than just throwing it away here and not getting all the characters over where they really could have, you know?
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that.
I felt they just squandered an opportunity, and NXT doesn't usually do that, but I felt here they squandered it. And it was a good hard hitting match. I enjoyed it, but yeah, just the crowd, it was missing like the big time atmosphere from it, and all that jazz. But hey, on that note, why don't we take a final break, and when we come back, we'll talk about our top 10 matches and top 10 wrestlers so far this year.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuestas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back. And we're looking at our top 10 matches this year and our top 10 wrestlers. Because it's pretty much wrapping up June right now. It's about 6 months into the season, halfway done with the year. It's been a pretty good year when it comes to wrestling, I think. Wouldn't you say? I think we have good quality. I've gotten a lot of variety of good quality matches from all over, huh?
Yeah, I've got matches, let's see, in my top 10. I've got matches on probably at least 4 different countries. Yeah, so that's been good. I've got wrestlers who are wrestling all over the place. And I'm going to say full disclosure, I've been doing my kind of indie puro catch-up, but I have not updated my spreadsheets. So, unfortunately, DDT, Big Japan, and All Japan are going to be grossly underrepresented in this list. But, I mean, yeah, to say that it's been a great year, I mean, it really has been. I didn't even crack all of my 4.5-star matches of the year, and that's my top 10.
Interesting. Why don't we look at our matches first, huh?
Let's do it.
All right. My number 10 is from January 15, 2017, WWE UK tournament, and that's Dunn versus Bate. I absolutely love that match. Thought it told a great story, and it really stood out to me. And it was, there's just so many great matches. It's so hard to find spots and stuff. Did you have that match on your list?
I most certainly do. I have it quite a bit higher than you, I think.
Well, you already have it.
I have it number 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I have
same. Same reasons?
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly the standout of the tournament, and I think a big part of what made that match is that that match built off of the entire tournament. So while it was one match, it really lent itself on kind of the emotion and the drama that had built up throughout the entire tournament in a way that helped kind of make it so that everything that you felt throughout the entire 2 nights kind of culminated in that one match in a big way. And that's why, for me, it's clearly the standout of the entire tournament as the best match, because they milked that drama that way.
Yeah. What did you have for number 10?
My number 10 is from Fight Club Pro's Dream Tag Team Invitational 3, or Night 3. And it was, I mean, I wouldn't say it was the epitome of the tournament, because it honestly in some ways was an aberration of the tournament, but it was easily my spot fest of the year. It really clicked in a lot of different ways. And as I said, it was an aberration for the tournament, because I mean, my pseudo number 11 was a great title match between Travis Banks and Zack Sabre Jr. that happened during the tournament as well. That was non-tournament match, but on those shows. But my number 10 is FSU, Eddie Dennis, and Mark Andrews versus the Lucha Brothers, Penta El Zero, Miero, and Rey Fénix. And as I said, this is my spot fest of the year. Everything clicked here with these great fun-loving baby faces of FSU going up against the, you know, kind of tweener-ish invading stars from Mexico coming into England. This match was actually, I think, a semi-final match. It wasn't even the final match of the tournament, but it really was just the most action-packed, insane match of the three-night shows.
Cool. What you have for number 9?
My number 9 is from New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's the Sakura Genesis, and it was a match that's probably going to be quite controversial for a lot of people, but it was Katsuyori Shibata versus Kazuchika Okada. I loved this fucking match. I thought that there was some stuff that, for obvious reasons, could have been done without. But, I mean, these guys just fucking killed each other for probably almost 40 minutes of just, really just unadulterated strong style love for me. And I love this match so much.
Fair enough. My number 9 was Trevor Lee versus Chip Day from CWF Mid-Atlantic. Absolutely loved the match. I had an old school flair built in with new moves and stuff. Overall, really hot match, and CWF is really pushing it hot as their best match this year, and I just loved it. And if we say a match from each other's list, just say if you have it higher or whatever have you, okay?
Okay.
Number 8, I have Zack Sabre Jr. versus Kushida from Rev Pro from January, March, April 3rd to this year. Just a great, it was like a dream match of mine. These guys didn't disappoint, had a great mat wrestling classic, and just tore it up, man. What'd you have for number 8?
My number 8 is from WXW's Ambition Tournament, which will show up again later on tonight. It was the final of the tournament, Timothy Thatcher versus Matt Riddle. Anybody who knows me knows that the shoot style grappling stuff is my kind of my forte, my favorite stuff, especially modern shoot style. I think with the mix of MMA style that you get from Matt Riddle here with the old school kind of shoot catch wrestling from Timothy Thatcher, this was some of the best stuff of the year for me. I mean, I love both guys. I think they're both great. And in this setting where they're really bringing it hard and really testing each other, you could just see the joy on Timothy Thatcher's face getting to apply what I think he actually probably does better than anybody else in the world, in a setting where they truly appreciate the wrestling art the way that he wants to deliver it.
Nice. What do you have for number 7?
My number 7 from New Japan once again. I don't even remember what show. I guess it was technically just the Best of the Super Juniors Tour final night. Kushida versus Will Ospreay. You talk about Kushida and the dream match scenario against Zack Sabre Jr. This is, in some ways, going into this, I was kind of groaning because these guys had wrestled each other already twice before this, possibly 3 times if I'm remembering incorrectly. And it felt like their matches were getting exceedingly worse after the first match was so good. Felt like the second match really lacked. And then the third match, they brought it home with intensity, with fire, with insane spots, with great storytelling, selling everything to really cap off a tournament that was in some ways lackluster. A tournament that I think was probably the worst Best of the Super Juniors in 3 or 4 years even. For overall, they really brought it home strong with a fantastic final that really made it seem like it was a big fucking deal.
Yeah, I had that number 3. Was blown away by it. Total great story. My number 7 is Freddie Ahai versus Anthony Henry from the most recent style battle on June 6th.
Oh, the rematch.
Yeah. I absolutely love that match. It was incredible. Told a great story. We're going into the final. Anthony Henry selling a neck injury, which of course sets up Yehai is going to go for the Koji Clutch, and he's working over the neck throughout the match. And then he has that unique offensive where he's stomping on Anthony Henry's hands, so Henry can't really grapple or throw holds on Yehai because his hands have been stomped the smithereens. So Henry's using a kick-based offense, and I absolutely loved it. I honestly thought it was like the smartest work match of the year. And then down the stretch, Henry starts going after Yehai's neck, and with some great revenge spots and payback spots, and just a really strong match. And these guys click really well, because the first one was one hell of a match, but I thought the rematch was smarter, well worked, had bigger moments, and really delivered. My number 6 is what do I have 6? Oh, Matt Riddle versus Kyle O'Reilly from Progress. I mean, from Evolve from May 20th of this year. Again, just great guys on the mat, tearing each other up. Great storytelling by attacking certain body parts. These two guys just click, and they just have a natural type of chemistry with each other.
What did you think of their match in PWG?
I didn't like it as much. I felt O'Reilly was carrying more weight in PWG, and I felt they went a little too long. And they just didn't click on that one. But here, I thought they clicked and knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that their match in Evolve was worlds better. I think their match in PWG, and I hate to say it because, you know, I was there live, but I felt like the match in PWG in some ways disappointed.
Yeah.
So, Where am I at? Six?
Yep.
My number six, again, now that I look at it, these guys, I think, kind of murdered my my top ten. I think the only New Japan and them are kind of neck and neck. WXW, 16-karat gold, the final, the big one, Ilya Dragunov versus Walter. This was a fucking war. A bloody war. Me and you have talked about it. We didn't review it on the show, but we've definitely talked about it as kind of a, I think, a mythical match of the year with Ilya playing this insane...
No, we talked about it on the show.
Did we? Okay. Okay.
Because we reviewed the nights and we did the shoot style tournament.
I thought we only did Ambition, but maybe we did do the 16 karat. Either way,
okay.
Ilya playing this such a fucking, the ugliest blowjob baby face, as you have talked about before. I think Ilya Dragunov could fit that to a T. Playing this underdog madman character that built throughout the entire tournament. Again, just like when I was talking about the UK final tournament, kind of building off of the entire tournament and being able to cash in on the drama from three whole nights in one night. That's what they did here. Walter doesn't worry about himself. He's the most selfless worker probably on the planet. The guy is all about just telling the story that he needs to tell. Does it to a T here and just has a fantastic match, making Ilya Dragunov feel like a world beater, being able to survive Walter, and that's all it takes by the end of it. So,
yeah, and that was my number one. That was my favorite match this year.
Wow, I'm not completely shocked because I have it 4.5 stars. My number one match is 4.75. So, I mean, it's not that I don't think that this is in contention for the top. Because, I mean, once you get to the top 10, you realistically could make it to the top spot, depending on how I feel and rewatch. But, yeah, this match is just phenomenal. So I would definitely recommend anyone go and watch it. My number five, we already talked about, Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate from the UK Classic or the UK Championship Tournament Final. Nothing more I really need to say on that one.
And mine, my number five was the Omega versus Okada, our draw, June 11th. We just covered it. I think we covered it in pretty good detail between the three of us and the two of us and Quentin. And, I mean, it was funny because I felt like I was like the low man on the opinion of it. Yet I still have it in my top five matches so far this year because it's an incredible match. But it has warts on it.
What's funny is it doesn't make my top 10 and you think you're the low man. But as you talk about, we covered it just last week. I do want to take the time to give a shout out to my buddy Drew Wardlaw from Burning Spirits Podcast. He did say that our conversation about this match is the best conversation that he heard anyone saying about the hour-long draw between Omega and Okada. So if for some reason you're listening to this and you didn't listen to that, jump back there and listen to that, because that's high praise coming from Drew.
Well, tell Drew thanks if you talk to him anytime soon. Number four, New Japan Pro Wrestling. I have Naito versus Michael Elgin from February 11th of this year. I thought it was great storytelling. I got a kick out of the Observer because you could obviously tell Elgin is a source now for Meltzer, because I remember when they first described it, he put it over as Naito being this master of being able to put together a match, and then a week later he had to retract it and go, no, I understand Michael Elgin was the one calling the match. So Elgin was going to let Naito take his thunder from him and expose himself as clearly a source, which is no brainer when you think about it. I have a fantastic wrestling match, told a great story, and I was blown away by it. What was your number four?
I'm just going to say that's really smart of Elgin, because, I mean, the number one for both of us for GWE was someone who is very famously known as a Meltzer stooge, so yeah. Elgin's going to get himself to that top spot of GWE for the next round. So my number four is a match that, honestly, I would have bet... this is probably going a little bit too far trying to toot my own horn for knowing about stuff that people don't watch. No. But it is a match that I think was underappreciated, underrepresented. It's from Over the Top Wrestling out of Ireland. It was in Dublin, and it was back in the Dr. Dre in Dublin City, and it was Mark Andrews versus Mark Haskins, and these guys just killed each other in this epic babyface versus slightly heelish babyface match. I mean, Mark Andrews as underdog selling babyface is just probably the best in the world. Mark Haskins as the aggressive pseudo-bully over the top just has to scratch and claw for every inch that he gets. Could not be any better. I don't think that there's any way that you could get like two more perfectly. They know each other. Their styles suit each other so well. It's in a dingy bar with, I think, my good friend Jamesy from the DKP and from Wrestling With Words. They're live in attendance, hooting and hollering like the madman that he is. I think this probably happened days before his second daughter was born. This match was phenomenal, and I don't think that a lot of people talk about just how great it was. This was kind of in February. It was after the Glow when people were kind of talking about just how great the Kenny Omega versus Okada match was at the Dome. It was such a big deal, and I was kind of like, I think that these guys gave him a run for their money in this tiny little bar in Ireland. So I highly recommend this match if you haven't seen it. It's just really fantastic.
What did you have in your number three?
My number three, again, from WXW Ambition Tournament. This was Timothy Thatcher versus Jeff Cobb. These guys, given every match, every time they lock up, giving the nod to their trainer, Oliver Gray, pops me every time just because I've been watching Oliver Gray growing up in California in general, because he's more of a, you know, Central California, NorCal guy. But I've heard about him, seen him for years. So it's just really cool to see the fruits of his labor producing these two top level athletes who show up here in Germany to really just show off what they can do. You've got an Olympian versus this catch style. Just, I mean, as I talked earlier about Thatcher, I think he's probably the best in the world at what he does as a catch wrestler. And that's the style that speaks to me the most in wrestling, because I think that everyone should treat all wrestling like it's real. And that's exactly what he does. I couldn't see like really any flaws in this match other than possibly the setting, possibly the crowd. I mean, their reactions were amazing the whole way through. Maybe you could say it was a little too short, I guess, but for me, this match was fantastic, amazing, next level stuff.
Yeah, my number three, what we already talked about, which was Kushida and Ospreay. My number two, though, was AJ Styles versus John Cena at the Royal Rumble this year. I was blown away by it live. I was blown away by it back on review. The crowd was totally into it. These guys kind of have, which I know the WWE hasn't really had that. You had it a little bit like Lesnar and Goldberg, but I felt Cena and Styles had that dream match vibe from the audience, where they can also have like a match of the year contender type of thing. And I don't think the WWE's had that in their back pocket in a while. And it was just great. I mean, you have Cena is the established WWE star. Styles has already taken him down and has his title. He's defending it at the Rumble. Styles, Mr. New Japan, two-time IWGP champion, Mr. the face of TNA for years. Was a big face of indie wrestling. He has all the fans. He has all the credibility of the fans versus the phony champion John Cena. And Cena shows that he's just a great worker. Also, just a slightly different. But now he's updating his style to meet the times and stuff, which is a lot harder than people think. And I was just, again, an incredible match. What was your number two?
My number two was from Evolve 77, and it was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Chris Hero. This was Chris Hero's farewell match from the Indies, essentially. This match just had, I mean, these two rivals who had gone at each other back and forth so much over the past couple of years really felt like they were putting it all on the line and going about as hard as possible to have the best match that they could imagine. I mean, talked about selflessness with Walter earlier. Hero, obviously, he doesn't doesn't really have the same philosophy of selflessness, but in a lot of ways, as I talked about with earlier tonight with his match with Aleister Black, I mean, he really goes out of his way to make sure that at the end of this, you know that Zack Sabre Jr. is the better man. Even though he's, you know, it's the one win versus like three wins for Hero at this point, probably even more if you're looking outside of even Evolve. And Zack gets this one big win, and it feels like just the catharsis of so much. A legendary indie wrestling career feels like it was closed in this match, which does add a lot to just the drama and the emotion that comes with it. As Chris Hero moves along to what you would suspect is going to be a middling career as an active wrestler in NXT that ends with him retiring into a full-time career as probably one of the best trainers slash agents of all time for WWE, a guy who could easily probably be on that level of Arn Anderson now, as you talk about a guy who puts together these great matches for other people to execute because he can't do it anymore. And so, yeah, it's just so much emotion. I think I'm even getting a little teary-eyed here talking about it because the strikes, the brawling, the brutality of the match, the submissions, the technical grappling. I mean, I guess if you were going to pick out a negative for the match, it would be that just it's hard to buy Zack Sabre Jr. against Chris Hero just because of the size difference. It did kind of hurt their rivalry for me a lot of times. But if you can look past that, these guys were, I mean, they were just like a little bit of heaven on earth every time they wrestled each other.
Yeah, I was there live front row, and it was a great match. Barely missed my top 10. My number one, we've already talked about in Walter and Dragunov. What's your number one, brother?
Oh, hit some talking points on number one, though. I want to hear what you think about it. Don't let me.
Well, you kind of covered it. I mean, it was just dynamic. I mean, Walter as the big bad bully, beating the crap out of Dragunov, never giving up, showing fire and battling. And it was just a style that's kind of almost forgotten, but it's a style that's rather easy. But only a few guys can do it, can play the bully role. And Walter, it might be the best bully in wrestling right now. And especially in that match, he was the ultimate bully, just beating the crap out of Dragunov. Every time he starts getting some home spots in, he'd cut him off with a nasty forearm or a clothesline or a punch. And it was just bully wrestling 101. Dragunov is like the face that isn't a blowjob baby face that isn't a blowjob baby face, but he made it work. And I think 90% of it was because Walter was such a great bully that you had to get behind Dragunov. And it was just, the dynamic was just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
My only match I've given this year 5 stars, so.
Nice. Well, my number one is a match that I think originally on this show even I gave 5 stars, which I've recently downgraded to 4.75, was from Wrestle Kingdom 11, New Japan, for the IWGP title, Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada. The match at the Tokyo Dome I thought was so much better, not so much better, but just enough better than the match, the draw that it actually eked out. The draw was probably in my top 15. Yeah, top 12. So, like, I just, for me, the catharsis of a guy in Kenny Omega who I've been calling for so long, you know that. You've heard me on this show talk about Kenny Omega, talk about him this entire time we've been doing the show as one of the best wrestlers of the modern era, one of the guys who truly understands kind of postmodern wrestling, even if in some ways postmodern wrestling might be a detriment to wrestling. I think going to be doing a podcast pretty soon on the network with Tom over on Military Industrial Suplex talking about that concept and how kind of postmodern wrestling is what's keeping wrestling alive, but it's also probably what's killing it at the same time. And Kenny Omega is, the guy who really gets that the best. He knows how to turn it on when he needs to turn it on, but also turn it on its ear when he needs to turn it on its ear and make the whole thing kind of a farce of itself. In this match, he was 100% serious, and he really showed what he can do in that vein. He had probably the performance of his life. He made Okada feel like an afterthought in the biggest show of the year for the biggest company in Japan. He made the ace of that company feel like an afterthought to himself. And it was really hard for me to not get a lot of joy out of that. Even if maybe it would have been better to have had a more two-sided performance just because of, you know, the setting and the title and all this and that. For me, that was exactly what I wanted. That's exactly what I needed. And I think it made Kenny Omega feel instantly like it wasn't just a fluke win of the G1. And it wasn't just, you know, oh, he's the flavor of the month. He felt like a guy who should be in that top mix at all times from here on out in New Japan. And it was a big deal for me. It was, like I said, slightly emotional and something that definitely got me super excited and super invested in New Japan in a time when I was kind of ready to check out.
That's awesome, man. I mean, we have some crossover, but a lot of differences. There's a lot more wrestling going on. And there's still plenty of catch-up to do. That's the thing about wrestling, man. It's so hard to keep up with everything nowadays, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's been really tough. I mean, as I said, my spreadsheet of matches got behind over the past couple of months, and that's just because I'm watching so much, I don't even have the time to just type up my ratings of every match. So, got to get back to...
Yeah, it's almost a chore now, you know?
Yeah, exactly, because I'm watching just too much wrestling, and now I'll just kind of give a little spoiler, but now I'm even trying to watch a little bit more Australian wrestling, and gonna do a quick little pod blast about that here in a couple days, and that's just adding even more to the docket to try to keep up on.
Awesome. All right, man, let's look at our top 10 wrestlers this year. Oh, you want me to start off with number 10?
Yeah, go for it.
Number 10, Trevor Lee. He's had a lot of great singles matches. We talked about the Chip Day one. He had that five-pack challenge. He's had a lot of great tag matches. I mean, the guy in CWF Mid-Atlantic is the king, and he always delivers when he's on that show. And he's had plenty of great opportunities. They give him the ball, and he scores a touchdown every freaking time. I can't put him over enough, man, just constantly going after it. And again, if he's in your list, pop in and say where he's at.
Oh, well, who was it?
Trevor Lee.
So Trevor Lee is on my list, and he is at number five. Trevor Lee is my number five, and I, for all the reasons you just said, a guy who, I mean, he was my number one last year. He's had a little, not inauspicious, but he's had a little bit less of a big time year this year, but still trucking along, can definitely still feel super special, especially in CWF. I think that's probably my only issue with him right now, is that he doesn't get a chance to show it off as much outside as he was last year.
Yep. Who do you have at number 10?
My number 10, you talked about him earlier. He's a guy who really brings it as the ace of the underneath, and also as the tag team champion through most of the year in Evolve, and that is Fred Yehi. Obviously just on the cusp of really breaking out. They just did some angles with him, trying to put him over even further in Evolve proper, crushing Larry Dallas. But he's a guy who I think has really shown this year that he can essentially work with anyone and get like a 4-star match out of even a lump of clay, it seems sometimes.
He's my number one. He's the guy I'm most excited to watch. His style is totally unique. I like him because he can grapple, but he also has really interesting ways of going into the grappling. His personality has grown leap and bounds since the last year or two from Evolve. You can view him as a top guy. He's made the FIP title really mean something even if it is, you're like, man, I want to see a Freddie AI title defense. I mean, just great matches. I mean, him and Anthony Henry had some great ones. Loved his match with Riddle. Loved the fight for the WNN title. I loved it. His match with Brian Cage was just brilliant. The dude just, it's so fun to watch. And he's like a cross where I think he's the best worker in the world right now, but he's a guy I'm actively wanting to watch because everything he does is unique and engaging to me. My number nine is Jeff Cobb. Dude's just had great matches all year round. You could say he's a little formulaic in a way because he's, you know, debates on his suplexes and stuff, but you know what? I like me a nice suplex. And so it's such a unique skill set. And he can, you know, he can go brawl, he can mat wrestle, he can throw suplexes. He's a guy you can believe in. And I believe in him as a talent. Who do you have at number nine?
My number nine is Kyle O'Reilly. I think that he came back into the indies super hot. He was able to have amazing matches with even guys like Davey Vega, Matt Fitchett. Had that fantastic match in Evolve with Keith Lee. He also had great matches while he was still in Japan. He had great matches already with Katsuyori Shibata. That may have been last year even, but...
That was last year.
Yeah, just still a guy who's, like, obviously hitting the indies now that he's been out of ROH with a real passion, and just been showing why they were stupid to let him go, essentially.
Yeah, he's a guy I didn't make my list, because I thought his first, like, 3 months was kind of just there. But the last 3 months, if he's come out like gangbusters, where I think eventually if he stays on the indie scene, I see him in my top 10 by the end of the year. But right now, I just don't have him there. Who do you have at 8?
My number 8 is Keith Lee. I just mentioned his great match with Kyle O'Reilly, but he's had so many other great matches. The guy, I mean, a big part of what makes him work is he just understands his character so well. He is Keith Lee in every setting. He's phenomenal. He has great matches with everyone from Zack Sabre Jr. to Brian Malonis to, I mean, anyone you can imagine. The guy can just really bring it and, as I said, sticks to who he is and always just brings this insane amount of charisma and just everything to what he does.
I have him in 8 also.
Nice.
And it's a guy... I mean, I've been high on him for years because I've seen him live from Texas. It was it felt really great when I said, yeah, I bet this guy could be main eventing WrestleMania in the next 2 years. And when I was over at WrestleMania this year at the Hales get-together before we went to a show, and then he goes out and has a blowaway, probably was the breakout guy at WrestleMania weekend. And so it made me look like a genius. So thank you, Keith Lee. Who do you have it? Okay. My number 7 is Kenny Omega. I know you have him higher.
I don't.
You don't have him on the list?
I wanted to get him on the list so bad, but he just got bumped out. I mean, he's had probably like... he's had like 4 matches that I have like in my top 15, but like that's it. He hasn't done anything else, and it makes it really tough for me to get him in my top 10.
Yeah, I got him in the top 10 because, I mean, the 2 Okada matches, there was the Ishii match. I enjoyed his 6-mans with the Bucks when he did the tour and stuff, so he got enough for me to give him the edge and get him in, because I thought his high-end stuff was really high-end, and I give credit for a guy going an hour, which I doesn't make you a superior worker, but I think you got to be a certain type of person to be able to go 60 minutes and keep it interesting, and he does. Other people think he's had, you know, I mean, 6-star matches, but I mean, I had the first one at 4.25. I had this one at 4.5. I had him in the Ishii match at 4.5 stars. And then the tag work with the Bucks was a nice type of icing. And then even his big matches, I thought he performed well in a lot of the tag matches on the New Japan shows that he's been on. So I felt he had enough to crack my top 10.
Did you see the Tiger Ali match? It was in the UK?
No, I have not.
That's a solid match, and it definitely adds to the argument. That was the other... When I said I had 4 of his matches in the top 15, that was the other one that you didn't already mention. But then the other question is, did you see his tour of the UK tagging with the Bucks?
Yes.
In Fight Club, in OTT, and in and Rev Pro. I think we reviewed the Rev Pro match, but yeah. I thought that the OTT match like kind of actively was terrible and hurt the company.
I didn't see that match, so.
And then the Fight Club match against British Strong Style was essentially as bad as I expected it to be. And I think that those two matches really hurt his standings for me in this year.
Okay, and I haven't seen those, so that might also play into mine. And you're a big Omega mark, so I'll take your word for it. Who do you have at eight?
My number eight was Keith Lee. My number seven,
seven
is Big Daddy Walter. Who, I mean, you had him in your number one match of the year, so I would assume you have him higher.
No.
Barely
missed it. Trevor Lee knocked him off.
Part of his issue is that he's just WXW. So if you're not paying attention to WXW, you really aren't seeing him. But his work in progress this year really puts him over the top also. Just because he is that final boss of WXW, and he has been for a long time. But he's really kind of come into his own this year. Had some phenomenal performances against the Young Boys, especially with the Rise crew kind of coming up. Great match with ACH at Inner Circle. Great match with David Starr in 16 Karat. I mean, more than just in 16 Karat, but this year. Great tag team match against South Pacific Power Trip in progress. The match against the Hunter Brothers that everyone loves. The Trios match against British Strong Style. He's a super important part of that. He makes Yearn Simmons, every time he wrestles Yearn Simmons, he makes him feel like there's a reason why Yearn Simmons is the champion, because it just, he kind of lends that credibility to everyone he works with. Just really a phenomenal, underappreciated worker. I think he's going to be a guy who, I mean, in 10, maybe 20 years from now, with the footage is still easily available, he's going to be one of these revelation guys, like some of the World of Sport guys, or even some of the Japanese guys, where people are going to look back and wonder why he wasn't a bigger star in his era. Even, again, like some of the Lucha guys who go underappreciated from the 60s and 70s. I think he's a guy who's going to, in a few years, people are going to really appreciate just how great he was.
My number six is Matt Riddle. And he's a guy who I've been negative on him. But bottom line, the proof's in the pudding on the matches. And the guy just has tons of great matches, from Kyle O'Reilly to David Starr to Zack Sabre Jr. to Timothy Thatcher to Freddie Ihai to multiple man matches. Teaming up with Jeff Cobb as the Chosen Bros. The dude just delivers. I mean, I feel he's getting repetitive at times and going into tropes and stuff, but the grand scheme of things, I just think the dude just delivers. Oh yeah, that great match with Shibata early in the year. I mean, the guy just has too many quality outings to keep him out of my top 10. Who's your number six?
My number six is Jeff Cobb, Mr. Athletic. You just talked about the Chosen Bros. That's part of his case too, but then he's also got a lot better matches, I think, in his singles repertoire throughout the year. Stuff that goes under the radar. Wrestle Circus, the match with Moose, I loved as a Hoss fight. Then he turned around and had a match with Davey Richards in Defy that I thought was phenomenal. It was probably... he also probably had Joey Ryan's best match of the year, which coincidentally was also Jeff Cobb's worst match of the year. So take that as you will. Great matches with Jaka in Evolve.
His James Drake match, PWX.
That we just recently talked about. The match with Dave Mastiff, I absolutely loved. I mean, the guy is just... I think the only thing he's missing is a company that really feels like his home.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a place that really treats him like he's the number one guy there. The closest thing is APW, and I think they even just recently put their main title on him. But I mean, if there was a place that that really treated him like that big of a deal, I think it could definitely help. I think he got over really quickly in progress. They gave him a title shot within his first weekend there, so I think that bodes well for him, possibly, if they continue to go from there. But I mean, he's also had great matches in Mexico. I'm not even talking about kind of Matanza stuff, because it is kind of confusing to say what counts for what year. Obviously, because none of the Lucha Underground stuff was recorded this year, but some of it is going to air this year. But I mean, One thing I will say, and it does kind of color my appreciation of him as well, is that he's a California guy, and he had the match with Josh Barnett here that I saw live. Definitely ends up in my top 15 matches of the year right now. And it kind of was a really great thing because, I mean, someone got pulled from the card and they turned it into the main event, and Jeff Cobb steps it up, especially because of his legitimate Olympic background, is able to turn kind of a negative into a positive and create a super fight that really was, I mean, probably the best main event match that I'm going to see. Probably the best main event match that I've seen in my entire life live. And, like, a really big deal super fight for me, just because of their style and who the two guys were. So that definitely does add to it. But realistically, I mean, the guy never has a bad match. Even, again, I'll harp on it, but even against Joey Ryan.
That says something. Who do you have at number five?
Trevor Lee. We talked about him earlier, but the guy was my number one last year. I think based off of his CWF work and a mixture of kind of getting to show off a lot of different styles all over the place. I think with AAW picking up on kind of doing a little bit extension of the joke comedy stuff in his tag team work this year, and then seemingly going a little bit more serious with him just recently, as I've kind of checked out a little bit from CWF. Meanwhile, he did have a sub-10-minute match with Bobby Fish that I actually put over super strongly as another underrated match that I think didn't get the credit it deserved for just how good it really was. So I think as AAW takes him more seriously, he can continue to have great matches. A big chunk of his work getting done Impact in matches where he looks phenomenal, but unfortunately don't really feel like they matter just because of the company, is unfortunate for him. But realistically, I mean, the guy's having super fights everywhere he goes. And really just, I mean, fuck, he just gets it every part of the game. I think he gets it almost perfectly.
That's cool. My number five is Zack Sabre Jr. The dude's just, again, turning out great match after great match. He's been the Evolved champion. Great matches with Thatcher, with Leo Rush, and Matt Riddle. I mean, the guy is just, with the Chris Hero match, he's a guy who can come in, go into any territory, and he kind of feels like the traveling NWA champion because he can take the local hero and elevate him and almost make him people think that he's got a world beater. And I'm curious on what he's going to do in the G1. I think if he has a great G1, man, those G1s mean a lot and can really break somebody out and easily put you in a top, dialing out for a top one if you have a great G1. Who do you have at number five?
Oh, well, I have Zack Sabre Jr. at number one.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, I think just the stuff that you talk about, and it's part of why Trevor Lee was my number one last year, that traveling champion feel, that able to go everywhere and serve all these different roles thing that he can do. So, yeah, my number four is Kushida. Again, the guy mixes shoot style with pro style in probably the best. I used to kind of give that nod to Kyle O'Reilly, but watching Kushida recently have these amazing matches where he can mix in pro wrestling style, playing with your emotions, getting the crowd to really be in the palm of his hand. It's funny because I'm hearing there's backlash against him. Crowds are kind of not into him as much as they used to be, or if at all. They're booing him and this and that, but it's like, if they're booing him, they're booing him after the match is over, or they're booing him during his entrance. But when he's wrestling, those crowds may think that they don't like him, but they buy into everything he does. And it's one of those moments where I just really question, I mean, maybe they think he's getting pushed too much. It's similar to the Roman Reigns thing, where you're just kind of like, you guys boo him until you forget that you're supposed to not like him because you're too caught up in his matches. And then you go back to being upset with him instead of appreciating that this guy is doing this amazing work that makes you forget about what's going on around you. So that's why Kushida is right here at my number four spot.
Yeah, my number four is Okada. The dude had a lot of great matches. The first one with Omega you had in your top 10, I gave it 4.25 stars. The draw with Omega gave it 4.5 stars. The match with Suzuki, I give it 3 3/4, but I really liked it a lot. I just felt it went a little too long for what they were doing. The Shibata match didn't make my list, and probably because of what the result, so I felt guilty putting it on there. That's not me judging you, Tim, so don't worry about it. But I still have it at 4.5 stars, another great match. It's just, Omega, he also has that match with Tiger Mask and Tubby, which isn't bad. The guys, every match he's been put in to perform, he's performed. He's the ace of the company, and there's a reason why. Who do you have at number 4 or 3?
Number 3. My number 3, I talked about him quite a bit in my top 10 matches of the year, is Timothy Thatcher. The only thing that hurts him is that after the second half of the year, it really feels like he's dropped off and almost completely disappeared.
Yeah.
He's had some matches here and there, especially in the UK, that have still been very good. We talked about the Trios match against British Strong Style that I think I gave like four and a quarter star. But realistically, he's taken large chunks of time off. I mean, that's just normal for him, though. I mean, that's what he does. He comes in strong, he comes in hot, and then he disappears, goes to Germany, takes time off. I mean, the guy is... I think Timothy Thatcher, for me, will go down in history as the greatest weekend warrior of all time. I don't necessarily know that there'll ever be anyone who comes close to it, but for someone who's not committed to wrestling, the guy is just amazing at it. He works a style that speaks directly to me. It comes through the screen, and I buy into everything he does. Underrated as probably the best seller on the planet. And just, yeah, as I said, just probably one of the most fantastic wrestlers that there is. And just unfortunately, I mean, is not committed enough to the game to really make it to that next level. As a guy who makes it to the top 3 with, as of right now, if you go on his little cage match rating, it looks like he's had 38 matches in 2017. He's had less than 40 matches this year, and he still makes it to my number 3 spot.
That's impressive. I have number 3. I have Kushida for the same reasons you mentioned. The dude's a stud. I find it funny. I mean, because it was the tournament that put him over the top, and then the rematch of on the 11th, and the guy had an incredible best of the junior tournament, and I felt he had a better year than Takahashi. And you've heard all this talk about Takahashi potentially being the best wrestler this year, and here we have Kushida higher, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Both of us.
Who do you have? Yeah, who do you have at number 2?
My number 2 is Pete Dunne. Last year, when I did my top 50 wrestler list with Quentin, I think I had Pete Dunne number like 4 or 5. And I think that a lot of people thought that I was kind of crazy and co-opted by British wrestling and, you know, a guy that didn't know, like, was just blinded by my, you know, kind of connection to that scene and just being super into it. And I think that in 2017, he really took everything that I said about him in 2016 and really blew it out of the water. Yeah, I had him at number 4 in 2016. And in 2017, I think he's finally proved it to everyone else. I'm not going to be shocked if a lot of people have him in their top 5 and their top 3, maybe even number 1, because, I mean, the guy just has great match after great match. Obviously the breakout star of the UK tournament, like very clearly the most important guy of the fucking entire thing. Meanwhile, he's still having great matches outside of WWE, even though he's in WWE also having great matches. The no DQ match, or the, I guess it wasn't no DQ, but the, or yeah, the no DQ false count or whatever match with Jimmy Havoc that I didn't even like that much, and people are like bragging about how fucking amazing it was with barbed wire and just nastiness. And as I talk about my number one picks kind of for 2 years in a row being about guys who can fill a lot of different roles in a lot of different places, Pete Dunne really proves that if you're just like really fucking good at playing one thing, you can do it everywhere and still be just like this good. And he really does. He plays the same exact heel character. He delivers the same style of match everywhere, and he always knocks it out of the park. I would say sans one hiccup this year, playing Tyler Bate, as he dressed up like Tyler Bate, and Tyler Bate dressed up like him, and they had their exact same match from NXT TakeOver, but with their roles reversed. For probably one of the most bizarre matches that you'll see all year, but that was also surprisingly still really fucking good. So I definitely recommend people check that out. But then he did have that NXT TakeOver match that I think a lot of people really went over the top gaga for. And even I kind of felt like I didn't have it as high as others, just because it felt like these guys have been doing this for years. Where have you all been? But the fact that they're doing it on a bigger stage and really getting the appreciation really makes it just that much bigger. And in some ways, I even feel gratified, because I think even you have said, like, you were high on Pete Dunne when I still didn't even see it. So I think I think that he's definitely come through and really having just an amazing year in 2017.
Yeah, my good number two is AJ Styles. Again, I mean, he has so many great matches. Arguably the best television worker in the world right now. A guy just, you know, just performs, bottom line. Who do you have at number one?
My number one is Zack Sabre Jr. I mentioned it earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think the guy just, he oozes that kind of cocky confidence. Yep. As a lot more places have started to use him as a heel, he's really kind of come into his own, bring something different. And I hate to, like, toot my own horn, but I just remember him showing up at Bola for the first time and me just being like, hey, I don't think you brought enough shirts. You're going to sell out of these. And then once we started night three, they were all gone, just like I predicted. So it's just it's another guy where in 2017, he's finally showing the world what I think I knew for probably the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's our list are pretty interesting. Some crossovers, some differences. But hey, it all could be changing in 6 months from now, you know?
This is true. So, Pete, just to reiterate, who was your number one?
Freddie AI.
All right.
So, that's that, folks. And what we're going to take a break. No, not break. We're going to call it a night. Timothy, you have anything you want to plug?
Well, nothing's official just yet, but I do have a couple guest spots probably coming up soon. So, just look out for those. I've got Lucha Undead comes out every week, except for when it gets trying, as it is right now this week. But other than that, just if you want to figure out what's going on, just follow me on Twitter over at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Titanzo Wrestling. Have a great week and watch wrestling that you like. Later, folks.
Last week, I flew to San Diego to see my auntie. Day one, I met her hot stepdaughter. She's a cheerleader, she's a virgin, and she's really tan. As she stepped out of her massive car, I could only notice she was more than fuckable. I think she was coming back from the game or something, cause she was holding those city pom-pom. On day two, I fucked her, it was wild. She's such a slut.